From Kansas City, we hear a talk by the Honorable Alfred M. Landon, Republican presidential nominee in 1936. This talk is in reply to the speech made by Vice President Henry A. Wallace in Detroit last Sunday. Mr. Landon has titled his address, Vice President Wallace and Fascism. Mr. Landon.
At a time when this nation is engaged in a deadly struggle to preserve the ideals for which it has always stood, Vice President Wallace declared civil war. But he declared that war on the one Muellers, the little fellows, the small businessman, the farmer, the labor itself, on every American who might ever hope to do his own independent thinking to solve his own problem. Mr. Wallace, with the approval of candidate Roosevelt, gaily plowed the soil for a bitter political campaign. The Vice President and Mr. Wallace dealt teamwork and national unity a dismal blow. No president has ever had the unity that was Mr. Roosevelt's in early 1933. In December 1942, he had the same complete unity. Instead of pulling the country together as commander-in-chief to face the greatest military effort of our lives, candidate Roosevelt is pushing us farther and farther apart on domestic issues. We have only unity of the shotgun wedding variety in high administration circles. We are winning the war, but we're like the football team that has been slow to get started. We are now in the third quarter. The enemy is tiring fast and has no reserves. If we keep up our hard driving pace, we don't give the enemy a chance to catch his second wind. Therefore, we need unity and teamwork to get the full advantage of our immense superiority in men and materials. If our drive slackens, if we fumble, if our intensified efforts are diverted by domestic bitterness, the victory punch will be delayed. It is even possible that it may slip from our grasp. That is the disturbing factor of Vice President Wallace's indiscriminate invective in Detroit. As one of the opening guns in a vital presidential campaign, he did not meet issues as issues. Facing them frankly and openly and honestly with the cold facts that lay before the judgment of the American people, he sought to avoid clear-cut issues by hurling hard names at everybody, including his fellow Democrats, who are asking embarrassing questions about the notorious failures of the Roosevelt administration. He exerted himself to hide facts behind the curtain of blind hate, of unthinking distrust and suspicion. He struggled to kill judgment, not to call it forth. And yet, intelligent, honest, unemotional judgment is the only weapon which, in the hands of the ordinary citizen, can keep alive the blessings of liberty in any government of truly free men. Schisms and hatred stalk the land. Hunger, too, rides close behind if the present policies are continued. The appalling specter of uncontrolled inflation threatens. Disorder is increasing. Something is always going wrong with the planner's theories. The president refused to obey certain laws enacted by Congress. Our government is being run too largely on the premise of threat and fear and secrecy. The bitter controversies so deplorably characteristic of this administration are the result of life-term ambition. It is upon the meat of confusion that it feeds. The administration has abandoned the original New Deal. In other words, the post-war plans of the Palace Guard bureaucrats are to relieve the businessman of all responsibility, and to relieve organized labor of all responsibility, and to relieve the elected representatives of the people in the Congress of all responsibility. That is the fascist theory of a planned economy. It is the only New Deal answer to the unsolved problems of unemployment, poverty, and mass machine production. It is necessary to remember, despite the propaganda of the vice president, that the only way the New Deal was able to make a dent on the unemployment problem of this administration was by a $300 billion war production and the draft. With camp-meeting fervor, the vice president condemned economics of scarcity. He was beclouding instead of clarifying the issue. He carefully avoided mentioning the record which shows that it was the bureaucratic planners who sprung the idea of creating artificial scarcities of food and clothing by restricting production. The mainspring in the New Deal watch of screwy economy was to kill the little pigs, to plow cotton under, to restrict the planting of wheat even as late as this year. Mr. Wallace also chose to forget that we are paying in top-heavy taxes today and increased prices for food and clothing for those dreary years in which we subsidized idle land, idle manpower, and idle ambition. Aside from our war, the most urgent and stupendous problem confronting the American people is winning the peace at home. This is of greater importance than international solidarity. All important as that is now and in the future. Because unless we get our domestic post-war plans in tip-top shape, we will not have the strength to assist in spreading peace forevermore in the world at large. After the war, we shall face a very difficult task to convert this country to a sound and functioning peacetime basis. That is when the left wing of the New Deal, with its overweening desire to regulate, expects to permanently establish state socialism. We are now witnessing the preview of life as it will be permanently under the New Deal gone to seed. An arbitrary bureaucracy resulting in Nazism or fascism, the death knell of individual freedom. The domineering attitude of New Deal bureaucrats who conduct themselves as masters rather than servants of the people. Their contempt for any law but their own decrees, made in secret without enlightening congressional debate. The delight they take in ordering the people around. In fact, their contemptuous attitude for the people is being demonstrated daily. The utter fallacy of permanently organizing and regulating a country of this size and diversity of interest by muddling Washington bureaucrats is being proven before our very eyes. That is, if the one Mueller's, the independent farm owners, the independent businessman, the labor leaders, the middle class are to exist. Of course, it is not wholly fair to take the present as an example of the planners' ultimate rule, because according to their plans, they do not intend to be bothered with the one Mueller's of this country any more than the Russian or German bureaucrats were. The small but dominant group of New Dealers does not expect to eliminate the middle class or the one Mueller's with the firing squads, as did the communists. Their plans really come closer to the early days of Hitler, with the one mule class eliminated through deficit financing and business, labor, and agriculture managed by the national government from Washington. Wallace pants in theatrical horror of some mysterious and unnamed scoundrels whom he labels American fascists. All right, what is fascism? Fascism is fundamentally nothing but the philosophy that political office holders should run the people, instead of the people running the political office holders. The New Deal represents the first time in American history that we've been told brazenly that Washington bureaucrats know more about how each of us should live and eat and work, how we should earn and spend our money, that Washington bureaucrats know more about how much liberty is good for us than we do ourselves. Fascism is government management of the total domestic economy of a nation. Who then are the real fascists in America's life today? The Nazi theory of government forms the basic post-war issue on the outcome of which stability of business, employment, and agriculture depends. Yes, the very life of the republic itself. Can a greater blight be imagined than that to the businessman and the farmer who is planning for post-war production and employment, or to free and independent labor unions? Can a greater blight be imagined to the future of the boys and girls who are returning from service to their country than to have our business, labor, and agriculture managed by Washington bureaucrats? Let's stick to the record. They marched away to fight fascism, and they come back to what? There were more Americans on the humiliating dole in 1939 than at any time in our history. Mr. Roosevelt had been unable to solve the unemployment problem in 6 years and with lots of billions of dollars. It was not until the war orders started pouring in from Europe in the fall of 1939 and the draft of 1940 followed by our own war production that Mr. Roosevelt had the unemployment problem solved for him. Is that a record that entitles the vice president to call everyone that's not a New Dealer a crook? To the charges made by the Democratic congressman on committee after committee, charges of appalling administration bungling, the vice president had not a word to say. His only answer is to feed the fires of agitation by calling everyone else a crook. Let's stick to the record. When you come to think about it, isn't that the only explanation the New Deal bureaucrats have ever given for the fact that something is always happening to their iridescent plans? The pot of gold at the end of the New Deal rainbow never materialized for millions and millions on the dole. It is characteristic of an administration representative to make glowing references to laudable future plans. But what about now? What about the administration's failure to plan decent housing conditions for war workers? We will be lucky if we escape terrible epidemics as a direct result of that. Our tragic, tense race situation is a further direct result of that failure, and the president burying for so long his committee on fair employment practice. These are some concrete questions the vice president could have discussed in Detroit. Instead of clarifying, he evaded them by the same old tactics of the master politician in the White House, by a glowing discussion of problems far from the present and far from the home front. What a contrast to Prime Minister Churchill, who never promises the English people anything but toil, while Mr. Roosevelt is always promising the American people a piece of pie by and by on the cuff. The shadow of a notable bitter election that will mean either the eclipse of the fascist New Dealers or the American Republic is already appearing over the land. The Republican Party and real Democrats are the only representatives of the great liberal principles of Jefferson as they are being given force and vitality under the Republican leadership. And the high ideals of freedom for all peoples will be nothing but promises written on water if the fascist New Dealers win this battle against the One Muellers.
You have heard an address by the Honorable Alfred M. Landon, 1936 Republican presidential nominee, who spoke to you in reply to the speech made by Vice President Wallace in Detroit last Sunday. Mr. Landon spoke to you from Kansas City.